You're listening to The Andy Frohl Show, centrally located in America, on the TAFS Radio Network.
We are back on The Andy Frohl Show, and Danny, on June 15th in history, this is the day that Ben Franklin experimented with flying a kite during a thunderstorm, in which he was able to demonstrate the relationship between lightning and electricity. That was 1752. Also, 1844, Charles Goodyear was granted the patent for the process that strengthens rubber. I think that's the vulcanization of rubber is what it's called. Mm-hmm. 1844, and of course we still have Goodyear tires. But today we are talking about Ann Coulter and her new book, and not getting caught up in the controversy about her attacks on the 9/11 widows and whether or not it's over the top and all of that. Let's talk about Ann Coulter's ideas. So I'm going to mostly stick to chapter one of her book because that's as far as we need to go. The title of the book is Godless, the Church of Liberalism. And chapter one is titled, On the Seventh Day, God Rested and Liberals Schemed. So let's start with a couple of broad overview statements here. The first is that one of the things that I noticed about Ann Coulter's writing is that she strings together kind of isolated ideas, right? And she argues by anecdotes, right? And she takes stuff out of context and then claims that that all makes her point. She doesn't really understand the idea of building an argument very well. Considering she's a lawyer, she plays very fast and loose with ideas and facts and makes leaps of logic that can only be described as non sequiturs, right? Does not follow. Beyond that, I have trouble just understanding what she's trying to say some of the time. But the other thing worth noting is, you know, when I teach my course in listening, I talk to my students late in the course, once they've got some of the basics of listening under their belt, and I've talked to them about attitude already, that how important attitude is. I ask them to look at the amount of complaining that they do. And students are shocked. 20-year-old kids are shocked to discover how much of their conversation with their friends is spent complaining. Complaining about other students, complaining about people that aren't there, complaining about teachers, complaining about courses, complaining about life, complaining about it all. Any of this ring true, Danny?
Yeah, definitely.
And what I point out to them is that complaining is one of the weakest forms of communication. It tends to be a conversation about the past. It tends to be blaming someone else for your situation or the world's situation, which is a form of not taking responsibility, right? The whole logic that the conservatives have put forward that the media is liberal is, first of all, not really true. And there are books out there that explain how this is, and I've explained it before. But even if it were true, harping on it is a form of avoidance of responsibility. Go out there and change the world if you want to change the world. But complaining about how it is today is simply escaping responsibility for it and saying, oh, I'm helpless, so I've got to just complain about how life is. And that's what a lot of talk radio is about. And it's one of the things that I don't like about talk radio. For the most part, I try and limit my complaints to two groups. One is other pundits, speakers out there in the media who are complainers. I don't mind complaining about the complainers, which is what we're doing tonight with Coulter. And I don't mind complaining about policy issues or politicians that take positions that I think are wrong. Right? But for me to just gratuitously complain about someone, the other thing is that you don't go into the personal attacks. Okay? And that's what so many of the right-wing talk show hosts, from Hannity to Savage to Coulter, Coulter's not a talk show, sorry, to Limbaugh, to O'Reilly, do quite well. Now, it's true that the Air America gang does it too, okay? They're basically trying to copy what the right has done and do it with more humor than the right does it. And I don't think they're very successful at it so far, but I also think that liberals are less likely to be willing to sit there and listen to 3 hours of whining and complaining and bad jokes about the other side. than conservatives are. So there's a much bigger audience for conservative talk radio. You know, conservatives think there's a bigger audience because their ideas are superior. It hasn't occurred to them yet that it's the Howard Stern effect. Okay? There are plenty of people out there willing to listen to Howard Stern, and he's the number one guy in radio. Does that make him the best? Does that make his ideas the best? No, he's a 16-year-old kid at heart that likes talking about doo-doo, and he likes talking about lesbians, and he likes women to come on and take their clothes off on radio and to kiss on radio, and he has all these adolescent male fantasies that he plays out on the air, and he gets a big audience for that. But that doesn't make his ideas superior, and it doesn't make Rush's ideas superior either just because he's the number one radio talk show host. It means he's tapped in to a large group of people that are willing to listen to that drivel. Back to Ann Coulter. Here's how she starts her book. Liberals like to boast that they are not religious, in quotes, which is what one would expect to hear from the state-sanctioned religion. I'm not even sure I know what that means. She's saying that liberalism is the state-sanctioned religion. Back to Ann. Of course, liberalism is a religion. It has its own cosmology, its own miracles, its own beliefs in the supernatural, its own churches, its own high priests, its own saints, its own total worldview, its own explanation of the existence of the universe. In other words, liberalism contains all the attributes of what is generally known as, quote, religion. Well, I will get to some of these points as we go. She goes on to say, as a matter of faith, liberals believe Darwinism is a fact, people are born gay, child molesters can be rehabilitated, recycling is a virtue, and chastity is not. Well, wait a minute. So, when we say Darwinism is a fact, I've talked about science before on this show, and I will just say that the evidence for Darwinism is so overwhelming, she might as well say that liberals believe that gravity is a fact. In the strict scientific sense, gravity is not a fact. It's possible that a better theory will come along to account for what we understand as gravity today. But most scientists think of gravity as a fact. Right? It's the same with the evidence for evolution. It is so overwhelming. The problem is, in terms of the right-left dichotomy here, or the difference between science and religion, is that half the country believes in a literal interpretation of the Bible, roughly half. And so they think that the earth is between 6,000 and 10,000 years old. And of course, as the scientific evidence piles up, there's studies every week that talk about something in the fossil record that suggests something happened 85 million years ago instead of 140 million years ago, or 350 million versus 400 million, or 3 billion versus 4 billion. Because the Earth is about 4 billion, 4.5 billion years old, the universe 12 to 14 billion years old. Well, if half the country believes that it's 6 to 10,000 years old, you can't really have a conversation about science with those people because they're in a whole nother zone. Now, Anne doesn't make clear exactly what she thinks of science, but she's very clear that liberals hold on to science like it's a religion. I have to tell her, I'm a liberal, and I don't hold on to it like it's a religion. When a better theory comes along, I'm there, and so are 99% of the scientists. That's how science works. I think by whatever she did in her undergraduate years, I don't think she got a particularly good education, and then she went to law school, which wouldn't necessarily have her steeped in the principles of science, but for whatever reason, she doesn't actually have a very good education based on what I'm reading in this first chapter. So on some level, I agree with her. Liberals would say Darwinism is essentially a fact, meaning the evidence is so overwhelming, the odds that it will ever be thrown out in favor of another theory are slim. Will the theory be modified and tweaked? Yep, it is every day and every year. Will it be thrown out in favor of the universe is 10,000 years old? Not a chance. She went on to say, people are born gay. Well, there's more and more evidence that's true. Now, she makes the argument, well, why don't the gay people die out if people are born gay? You know, I submit to Anne, she ought to study about the human genome. There's a lot of things we don't understand about DNA yet, but we're starting to understand more and more. The third one was child molesters can be rehabilitated. Actually, I think the science points towards child molesters cannot be rehabilitated in general. I think the verdict may still be out on that, but I don't necessarily believe that they can be rehabilitated. So she thinks liberals believe that. Most of the liberals I know don't believe that. Recycling is a virtue? Not as a matter of fact or faith. Recycling has some positive attributes, primarily the recycling of aluminum. I recycle some other products, but I don't claim that there's an economic advantage to recycling paper. I think it's a wash at some point. We have more paper recycled than we can actually reuse. And chastity is not a virtue. Well, I don't know where she gets that. Of course chastity is a virtue up to a point. Anyway, let me move on. Here's another quote from Ann Coulter, Chapter 1, Godless, The Church of Liberalism. If a Martian landed in America and set out to determine the nation's official state religion, he would have to conclude that it is liberalism, while Christianity and Judaism are prohibited by law. Well, that's just ridiculous. Now, if I was a 20%er, I'd say, that's a lie, as O'Reilly and everybody else is saying about the left and Coulter says about the left. They love to talk about either they're telling the truth and the other side's telling a lie, when in fact the truth is often a matter of interpretation. But in this case, the idea that Christianity and Judaism are prohibited by law. Now, I know she's a satirist, and so satirists say things that are over the top, and then she'll explain what she means somewhere down below. But in fact, taken literally, Christianity and Judaism not only aren't prohibited by law, we've never had a president of the United States that wasn't a Christian. So don't tell me that somehow atheism or science or non-believers have a leg up in this country. In fact, if you were to run for president and say that you didn't believe in God, you couldn't possibly win. So, she goes on to say, quote, nearly half the members of the Supreme Court, the ones generally known as liberals, are itching to ban the references to God on our coins and in the Pledge of Allegiance. Well, if that's true, why didn't they do it long ago when they had more liberals on the court? In fact, they specifically have not remove God from our coins or the Pledge of Allegiance or where God is mentioned in Congress or, in fact, on the walls of the Supreme Court. She goes on to say, liberalism is a comprehensive belief system denying the Christian belief in man's immortal soul. No. I would say the majority of my liberal friends are Christians. Quote, their religion holds that there is nothing sacred about human consciousness. That is nonsense. I can't tell you how in awe liberals are of human consciousness. That is the great mystery on earth. You know, the mystery of religion, the mystery of the Trinity, the mystery of Christianity, the mystery of Islam, the mystery of Buddhism, whatever you want to talk about, are mysteries that we can't see. All right? Human consciousness is there. It can't be explained yet by science. It's a true mystery, and I'm in awe of it. The universe, the way it exists, we know it's 12 to 14 billion years old. We know that there are over a billion galaxies, maybe 100 billion galaxies, and there are 100 billion stars in each galaxy, and there may be planets around each one. It boggles the mind. The mystery of it all, the sacredness of it all, is awe-inspiring, and it puts us in our proper place. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we infer from that that God came down to earth and came in the person of, you know, anybody from Joseph Smith to Moses to Jesus to Muhammad, and I don't mean that they were all actually God, just that he spoke through them, right? There are sacred texts in dozens of different religions. And what Anne is saying is that I happen to have been born into the Christian religion, and wasn't it lucky that I was born into the one true religion? Well, good for you, Anne. I'm glad that you see that and believe that. And I'm also happy for the people I run into that were born into the other true religions. She goes on to say, liberals swoon in pagan admiration of Mother Earth, mystified and overawed by her power. You know, I'm going to address this after the break because I've got an important point to make about two different kinds of religions that have been created on Earth. Those that eschew spirituality and privilege the body, and those that eschew the body and privilege the soul. We'll be back in a moment.
Fishing for secrets where the catfish crawl. The Mississippi River.